Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. After serving more than three decades in the U.S. Congress, this morning, Edward Markey officially became the junior senator from Massachusetts.
Vice President Joe Biden delivered the oath of office on the floor of the Senate.
Do you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that you take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which you're about to enter, so help you God.
I do.
Well, WBUR's political reporter Fred Tice was there in Washington to witness the swearing-in. He joins us now. Fred, with those words, I do, that now Senator Ed Markey delivered, the Massachusetts Senate delegation goes from one of the longest-serving in Washington to one of the least senior. What does that mean for the state?
Well, Meghna, I overheard Ed Markey chatting with Governor Deval Patrick and Speaker Nancy Pelosi as he was about to be sworn in the old Senate chamber. And he told them he's been seated next to Elizabeth Warren and that they are now the most junior and the fourth most junior members of the Senate. Markey said not since 1789 has Massachusetts had such a junior delegation. I asked him about that afterwards, and Markey pointed out that before Ted Kennedy died, he and John Kerry together had 75 years of service in the Senate. Markey said that he and Elizabeth Warren are going to partner to ensure that Massachusetts has the highest quality representation humanly possible, but they're starting with a very junior delegation.
Yeah, 3 years down, or 2 years down, 73 to go. But what is Senator Markey's agenda going forward from today?
Well, you know, Markey says he hopes the Senate can work in a way that he has to be assigned to his committees first. And in the House, Markey's been the leader on climate change. And that's clearly one of his priorities. He's also said that since the campaign that he wants to work on gun control, which he made a big issue in the race, and on jobs.
Okay, so it's interesting that he's being sworn in now because the Senate, Fred, as we know, is not necessarily the most functional of bodies. And even after Markey was sworn in today, I understand there were some fireworks regarding the filibuster. So here's Harry Reid announcing that the two parties, that the Democrats and Republicans, have struck a deal on filibuster reform.
It is a compromise. And I think we get what we want and they get what they want. Not a bad deal.
So, Fred, tell us what happened.
Well, you know, it's a sign of how dysfunctional the Senate has become these days that just before Markey was sworn in, Republican leader Mitch McConnell walked up to the podium and said to Vice President Joe Biden, reputedly a good friend of his, and he said to him jokingly that he would come up on the podium to talk to him, but he did not think that the two could be seen together these days. Markey says he hopes the Senate can work in a way that the House, as he knows, is not working. Today, the Senate was able to move forward on a vote to confirm Rich Cordray as head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And on the Senate floor this morning, Majority Leader Harry Reid thanked Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona as being basically the one person responsible for bringing Democrats and Republicans together in an agreement to prevent Democrats from eliminating the filibuster, the so-called nuclear option, the elimination of the filibuster. Senators met last night for 4 hours working out that agreement, Meghna.
Well, WBUR's political reporter Fred Tice reporting there from Washington at the swearing-in that happened earlier today of now Senator Edward Markey. Fred, thanks so much.
Glad to do it, Meghna.
Ed Markey's election to the Senate is just the latest sign of Democratic dominance in Massachusetts. And someone who gets a lot of credit for that is John Walsh, chairman of the state Democratic Party. Walsh is a political insider, a firm believer in grassroots campaigning and precinct-by-precinct get-out-the-vote organizing.
Walsh ran Deval Patrick's first campaign for governor in 2006, which provided a model for Barack Obama's White House run. And today, he announced he would step down from the party chairmanship to run Patrick's Political Action Committee.
It may be a little immodest to say he's got a good eye for talent, which I've sort of taken for him, and he made the case to me that this was something that would make sense, and he didn't have to twist my arm, to be honest.
Walsh's move to take over Deval Patrick's political action committee has intensified speculation about the governor's national aspirations. But today, Walsh told us the governor is focused only on finishing his current term on Beacon Hill.
The first job that I have is to help him with the last year and a half of that commitment to remain fully engaged and politically engaged through that to make sure that he does that job well. Honestly, from the day he got elected, there's been this assumption he's going to leave. And I understand, because for years, Republican governors have really wanted to have the job and were really ready to go the moment they got it. And so people in Massachusetts had built a pattern of seeing governors who this was some kind of a way station for them.
But obviously, your move to take over Deval Patrick's Together PAC is fueling a lot of speculation, more speculation, increasing speculation, and questions about the governor's next move and possible national aspirations. So let me just ask the question point blank. Is he going to run for president in 2016, for example?
So, no. He has told me, as he's told everyone, he's not running for president in 2016. He's going to serve and work right through the tape, and then he's going to go back to the private sector, which is where his career has mostly been.
But let me ask you hypothetically, could Deval Patrick run for president one day? You're an experienced operative. You know him better than just about anybody else. Could he?
So every ounce of my training says never answer a hypothetical question. Right? So, and my experience tells me those are treacherous areas. This is what I know. Deval Patrick is a remarkably talented person. And I'm convinced Deval Patrick could do anything he wanted to. And the truth of the matter is I would do anything to help him. But what I believe is he's going back to his business career and in the private sector in 2015 when he walks down those stairs. And I do believe he'll continue to be a leader in our country and a leader in our party, but just from a different perspective.
So let me ask you about sort of what you've brought to the Democratic Party in Massachusetts. You're sort of known as the voice of grassroots politics. You've insisted on a grassroots approach to outreach and so forth. Why is that so important? And how does that explain the enormous success that the Democrats have had in the last many years?
Well, the reason it's important is, at one very basic level, it works, right? It is something people really want in politics. The truth is that when you stand on someone's doorstep and you knock on the door and they answer, you represent everything that's the opposite of what they hate about politics. They hate the negative ads. They hate the lies. They hate the overwhelming amounts of money. They hate the two screaming heads yelling at each other and can't get anything accomplished. And here you are, a nice, normal person who's humbly asking for consideration for their candidate or their issue. It's why what studies find is when that interaction happens, not only do you connect better with the person, but they tend to tell other people that you were there. It's almost like, I had this political person come by and they were actually really nice.
And yet it sort of seems to, at least sort of superficially, sound at odds with the modern idea we have of communication, right? Social media, online, data banks of information and names. But somehow it's not inconsistent with that, right?
No, as a matter of fact, I think it's part and parcel of the same thing. The cool, snazzy part is all the techno whiz bang, super analysis of data manipulation, and, you know, people get it. But if it's all not in the service of direct face-to-face competition, how you're delivering the information still determines whether you're successful. And the best way is one person talking to one other person they know.
Well, beginning with that victory in 2006, you've had a pretty good run here. Democrats enjoy a huge advantage on Beacon Hill. All the congressmen are Democrats. I guess the only big loss while you were here, of course, Scott Brown's upset victory over Martha Coakley in the 2010 special election. What was the big lesson there?
Scott Brown, is that guy who lives in New Hampshire now? I'm trying to remember what happened.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one. Okay, so the big lesson there for me, the mistake that I made and that many people did, was we took it for granted. Those overwhelming margins, the difference in our positions, like we're right and they're wrong as far as we're concerned, that dominance, we forgot for a minute that it's only earned. And we thought we just deserved it and we didn't go get it.
Now, so that grassroots approach was missing or not paid enough attention to?
I think we didn't start early enough is one of the things. So one of the things, you know, we looked at, Scott Brown had been a state legislator for a dozen years of no account, never really accomplished anything and never really tried to. And because I and others made the assumption that we were going to win this, we allowed an opening. And Scott Brown, to his credit and to his campaign's credit, recognized the opening. They seized it. A lot of factors came together, and he won Ted Kennedy's seat. I mean, and I know people don't like to call it Ted Kennedy, but for me, as a first-generation Irish-American, it's Ted Kennedy's seat until Elizabeth Warren took it over.
Well, John Walsh, thanks very much, and good luck to you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being here.
John Walsh will step down as chair of the state Democratic Party to take over Governor Patrick's Political Action Committee.
Well, stick with us because coming up, lessons learned from the Boston Marathon bombing, particular lessons from a unique perspective with Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.